Welcome back to the Meet St. Louis podcast, brought to you by Mattress Direct, your local sleep specialist. Each week, we take you behind the scenes of your favorite restaurants, breweries, and small businesses. I'm your host, Alexis Zotos with KMOV. St. Louis is filled with artists, creatives, and makers. Whether it's unique to St. Louis or not, you can't argue with the fact that our city is incredible at showing up and supporting local. We sat down with two artists who've seen that firsthand. Malika Telford started Place Value Pottery as a way to combine her love of geography and ceramics. For Molly Swoboda, it all started when she was just a teenager and took her first ceramics class. She was hooked on clay. She started Boda Clay and discovered her love of creating dinnerware, shaping and molding the plate that sits at a family's dinner table, creating something both functional and beautiful. The two artists share the journey of their craft with me and really help us understand what goes into making that perfect bowl, that perfect mug or planter. And they talk about how the artist community continues to grow here. And that is demonstrated in their upcoming mug market, a market dedicated to showing the talent to people across St. Louis. So let's meet Malika and Molly.
Get the best price on brand name mattresses at Mattress Direct. You'll get the guaranteed lowest price, and the non-commissioned sleep specialists will make sure you get the right mattress for the way you get to sleep. You'll sleep better knowing you got the best price on the right mattress when you shop local at St. Louis Mattress Direct.
Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast. We're sitting here in your studio, Molly?
Yeah, it's a shared space, but I'm the primary user of it.
When did you find this space, and how did that sort of help transform what you were doing?
I found this space. I found my studio mates when I was working and taking classes at Forest Park Community College. Mm-hmm. And they started the space while I was at Mizzou. Our landlord is a high school ceramics teacher.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was kind of a shoe-in for them. And then I joined in last minute.
How long have you been here in the space?
I've been here for almost 4 years now.
Wow. Yeah. When did you decide that it was time to sort of get a space and take this to sort of that next level?
I feel like... With my business and with my like pursuit of ceramics, I've always just been like very open mm-hmm. to opportunities as they come, and obviously like pursuing things. But I've been really fortunate to have some great situations fall into my lap. I was renting a space from a widow. She is a painter. She was living in Benton Park, and her husband was a ceramics teacher, and they had a studio in their basement. So I was renting the space from her and slowly like purchasing all of the equipment from her as I could. And she like had to sell her house kind of suddenly. So
Because as a ceramist, you sort of need a space, right?
You need a space. Yeah.
Like one of those like crafts that like, oh, well, can you do it like at your kitchen table?
Well, I'll tell you,
it depends on
sort of what you're creating.
What scale you're creating mm-hmm. at. And I mean, if you're making sculptures, or there's a lot of people who make like very tedious, like, kind of sculptural pieces, or do hand building on their couch, and that has never been a reality for me. But
unfortunately, that was something I had to do a lot of, because I was, when the pandemic started, and I was mostly doing most of my work out of Craft Alliance, where mm-hmm. I also teach, and all of a sudden I found myself with that studio closed. I borrowed a wheel and took it to my scary basement. I was firing all my stuff like 15 minutes away at a friend's house at her kiln. And I did have a home studio for about a year, but then I moved. So my studio is in storage right now. Gotcha. So yeah, space is really important, because the schlepping things around is...
Yeah, and I, you know, there's a...
They're very fragile.
Fragility, that's what I was going to say. It's not like you can just toss it in the trunk and...
I remember one night, so it was probably like summer 2020, and I had a huge board full of trays on top of my Civic. And then I went and I closed the trunk, and then I just watched the board slide down the hood of the car onto the street. I'm just like, I quit. I'm done.
Oh, gosh. So tell me both a little bit about your history with ceramics. When did you sort of find it as a passion? Was it a hobby? How did that come about for you?
For me, I started, the first time I took a class was at South Broadway with one of my friends. Yeah. I took like their open studio hours. So we were really just playing. We were having a great time. We would go get donuts at the drive-in before and then go not make anything functional. But we had a blast.
How old were you?
I was 15.
Oh, well, that's how old I was, too.
Yeah, and we were, like, printing out the Google instructions on how to get there because we didn't have phones.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
other side of the city.
That's the throwback, is, like, people that remember, like, printing out Google Maps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I took my first, it's actually, this is 20 years ago this fall.
Wow.
Was when I was a freshman in high school, and I took my first ceramics class.
Yeah.
And then I never, and it didn't occur to me, like, I didn't study ceramics in college. I went in another direction. And even though I was, like, ditching classes to spend, like, the rest of my high school career in the clay studio, mm-hmm. it didn't occur to me until after college that that's what I should have been doing all along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was there a moment that you realized, like, oh, this could be something I could make a living out of?
Yeah, well, kind of. I when I moved to St. Louis, I dropped out of a master's program in geography, actually, at SIUE. And then I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I want to do with my mm-hmm. life. I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And that's when I was like, well, I've always loved clay. It's been a few years since I've been involved with it, and I think I'm going to find a studio and I'm going to get back into it. And that's when I started being involved at Craft Alliance. And that's
so I do want to ask, like, what did you think you were going to do with geography as a major?
Well, I think I think that when I was like getting into when I was in high school, I thought I was going to be a history professor.
Okay.
Like, that's what I thought.
That makes sense.
I thought I was going to go into some sort of academic route, but that was why I dropped out, because I was like, I don't actually know what I want. So maybe I shouldn't be paying for a master's degree right now. So,
and when did you realize that you could kind of combine that love of geography with your love of ceramics?
Oh, almost immediately. Like, back when I was in the studio, I'm like, well, I'm just going to put maps on things. And it looked a lot different back then, 10 years ago. It was before I had kind of a cohesive idea of what I was doing. But definitely, I was kind of laying the foundation for what I ended up doing once I started a business.
So, yeah, walk me sort of through that process of kind of crafting this idea, combining this love of maps and clay, and how it formed into what you do now.
Yeah, so well, starting from that spot where I was excited to make things, excited to explore the built environment, cultural geography, and design with that. But then I was doing things kind of casually. I started teaching. I have two kids, so like during this 10 years also, I had two kids. So it was kind of like a little bit of teaching, a little bit of making. But it wasn't until, I think, probably 4 years ago that I really started the business in earnest and had enough of a skill set, had enough trial and error with the design elements I was using to be able to be like, this is what I'm doing, this is working, and now let's sell this stuff and work on building a business.
What were some of the first pieces that you made? What were some of those first concepts of, like, this works with a map, like this? Together as a concept.
So I'm from Chicago, and I love a street map, love a grid. Moving to St. Louis, no, it's amazing because it's hilly. There's topography and there's curvy streets, and there's, like Chicago, there's kind of a grid system with mm-hmm. some water on the east, and so things kind of do trail out of the city in the same way, except then there's hills and streams and other, you know, it's really interesting. So I've gotten to kind of get to know St. Louis's like urban planning through this process, which has been fun. But the first things I did were a lot of Chicago map because, mm-hmm. you know, I had just moved here and I was probably homesick, and it's just a great city. But St. Louis is really amazing too. So, and everyone who's here intentionally really loves St. Louis. So mm-hmm. that's been That's been great. So street maps are really what I started working with. I really like the geometry of that and the shapes. But recently I've been doing screen printing using historic maps. And that's been really fun. So that was just in the last year that I've been doing that. So I'm going to keep seeing
is
where that goes.
Is that more images?
Yeah, yeah, more image-based, more. So I'm working with this illustrated Atlas of St. Louis from 1875. Probably a lot of St. Louisans are familiar with this one. It's Compton and Dry's Pictorial Atlas of St. Louis. So it's like the whole city laid out kind of in a bird's eye view from across the river with every single building that was there documented.
Oh, wow.
So it's really cool. It's fun exploring the neighborhoods and seeing what was there and what wasn't. And people are really into it.
Yeah. So for someone who knows literally nothing about this, like how do you take that atlas, that map, and then create something with it?
Yeah. Okay. So, well, first of all, there are a lot of copies of this, but it's huge and it's old and it's, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to get your hands on one. It's all available on the Library of Congress website. So I go in there, I take images, I edit them to get something that can be screen printed. So I make basically a silk screen and then figured out how to get a glaze to just the right thickness level to be able to screen print, just like you would screen print in ink or whatever, onto raw clay.
Wow.
And then firing it once and then doing kind of a little bit of a colorization on it and then firing it again under glaze, and that it worked. It took a lot of troubleshooting, but I think I've gotten it down.
I would imagine so much of both of your businesses is a lot of troubleshooting.
Yeah. Which is why it's good to have a like talk to other clay people because or else it's very lonely and you just feel like, and so if I call you and I'm like, Molly, I overfired my bisque load, and you're like, oh my, you'll take
because I would imagine most people in your life would have no idea what you're talking about.
People just know we're like stomping around
or the significance of how much labor that could potentially be lost.
Because if someone's like, oh, that sounds like a terrible, sorry for you, and I'll be like, how much work was in there, you know? I know it could be like weeks and weeks of labor can just slide right off the roof of your car. So
Molly, for you, when did you sort of figure out what exactly you wanted to create? You know, what was that trial and error process like for you?
I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm still trying to like narrow it down. I make far too many different kinds of
pieces. I don't know. I feel like everything's very cohesive right now.
Thank you.
What? Tell us a little bit about what you make.
Well, I started with tableware. I launched my business right out of college.
And did you go to college and study ceramics? Is that
slightly
different path? You didn't take
study geography. So after I took that class at South Broadway, I was a dual enrollment student in high school at Forest Park, and I was like, okay, let me like actually give this a shot and give it some attention. And I ended up working in the studio, and I would spend a lot of time there learning and absorbing. And I didn't have any concept of like I wasn't trying to like pursue it as a career. Okay. I was just like, I like this. I was 16, 17, you know, had no idea what a career meant. But I just like kept pursuing it and kept being nudged in that direction. Mm-hmm. So I did one semester at Mizzou after getting my associate's degree, and studied there with like the graduate students. I was the only undergrad there at the time. So I kind of like joined the grad critiques and that kind of thing. And I went there thinking that I would want to be a professor and that, you know, could be a great like way to make money doing ceramics. And then I just like quickly realized like that I didn't want to take the conceptual nature of my work that far to get a master's degree, because I was okay with the concept just being like super utilitarian and super like ritual based and, you know, simple.
Like a mug can just be a mug.
And it's so much more than
well,
that,
that's true.
But you don't have to, like, explaining it and our concepts of the value of something being handmade and the energy that it holds from that, like, touch and that production, like, it's not something that you really need to explain, and I don't feel like it's something that you really...
Because I would imagine most of your customers probably aren't taking it that deep
or
into
maybe
their mind.
Or maybe
just,
they are.
They do.
Subconsciously, they
maybe
are.
They are,
they
yeah.
do, but they don't need a graduate degree to explain it.
Like, that is fair. Yeah. That's fair.
I enjoy holding this better than, you know, a mass-produced
totally.
Mug. I feel something when I drink from it, and that's enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my professors was like, I don't want to just make bowls forever. And I think that that, like,
You're
hit
like, that
a nerve.
Sounds great. Oh,
and it took me a long time to be mm-hmm. like, maybe I just want to make bowls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. So, and that is what you are doing. But
yeah.
you're doing so much more than bowls.
Yeah.
So what, well, first off, I do want to ask, what's sort of your favorite thing to create?
Honestly, my favorite thing to make is plates.
Okay.
I like grew up, I have a really large family that kind of just pulls people in, and dinner was always like a thing that brought us together. And I think tableware feels like really important to me, but just also the challenge of making a really nice plate is...
People, I should say that plates are something that potters hate make. Like, a lot of people hate plates because
yeah.
of the cracking. And,
yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, same kind of idea. For those that have no idea how a plate is crafted,
mm-hmm.
how do you... walk us through how you make one.
So, the first thing you need to know about clay is that it needs to dry very evenly. Mm. If you have, like, thick bits of clay, the inside of that clay will dry slower than the outside. So if it's not completely, like, balanced and even, you'll have problems through that. And then because you're trimming a plate down, you don't want a really heavy plate, you're thinning it down, and it's kind of just at a really fragile place, and it can lead to a lot of stress fractures in the middle if you're not compressing and, like, really just, like, squishing and, like, making those molecules strong and bonded. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's kind of like an intuitive mm-hmm. thing.
Now, do you make them on the wheel, like on a wheel, and tell me if I'm using the wrong terminology,
yeah.
like on a wheel. Like, mm-hmm. I think most people, if they're going to think of, like, okay, somebody making pottery, they're, and maybe this is aging myself, but, like, you think of that scene from Ghost.
Oh yeah.
yeah.
With Patrick Swayze. And
actually,
like,
just rewatched that movie recently.
Really?
It's
yeah.
really
I mean,
sad.
Maybe that's just, oh, it's so sad.
It.
Like, that's where
yes.
my mind goes
with
when I think of, like, with the song.
Unchained Melody.
Again,
just gonna
perhaps
be high
I'm
the rest
aging
of the day.
Myself, but that's sort of, so is that how, when you're, are you utilizing a wheel? To,
I am. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people make them with slabs.
I do a combination, like, I make my mugs and planters on the wheel, but a lot of the dishes and trays I make from slabs.
And what does that mean to make it from a slab?
Sure. So basically you're just like rolling clay out into a flat sheet, and you're cutting it down and creating the form from those flat sheets.
Okay.
As opposed to starting mm-hmm. like with a ball of clay using gravity and centrifugal force.
Yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, but then the other thing you need to know about clay is that it has an insane memory. And
that's true.
If you have a thin kind of thing, whether it's a slab or a wheel thrown plate, it's hard to keep it flat
yeah,
all
yeah,
the time. If you lift something up, it might remember that you touched these two points and not the opposite. So it's
interesting.
Plates will, you can easily flatten it out again, but later in its life, a firing or two later, it might warp really badly. And who the hell wants a wobbly plate?
So someone might, but I would imagine, yes, most people don't.
Most people don't.
When I'm making plates and dishes from slabs, I have to deal with that too, where it's like, if I accidentally bend the slab ever so slightly in one way, and I'm cutting down rectangles, and I won't know until you get out of that final firing, and you're like, wow, okay, that clay remembered that I bent it one time, even though it flattened out. And
so how much... I guess, is that happening? How often does that happen where you create something and it's not flat, it's wobbly, wonky?
It happens a lot. And you know when it happens, it's like I will immediately be like, yep, I remember that morning. I was rushing through this process. I had to run off and pick up my kids, so I had to store them this way, and I shouldn't have moved them at this time. And, you know, so you can pinpoint and you can do better next time. I think the more you do it, the more you know those trouble, you know, those sticky spots that you might get into. But sad, lots of troubleshooting, lots of lessons learned, and then lots of learning the lessons and then doing the same thing again and making the same mistake.
I think, like, production, wheel thrown pottery, like, for me, it's really about repetition. Mm-hmm. And even though I've been doing this for like 8 years, 9 years, like pretty consistently, mm-hmm. like it's never been a small part of my life.
Right.
Always, like, if I'm making something for the first time, pottery's always going to teach me a lesson. Say, no, repetition, you got to do it again. And it'll usually crack or something, you know, the first time, and I have to like learn from that.
And I think people hearing this process, the trial and error, the mistakes, and what it takes to create that helps them understand, you know, this is much more than, as you said, a mass-produced plate or mug mm-hmm. that you're getting from.
Yeah, you're paying for our emotional labor and physical labor. The blood, sweat, and tears. Literally sometimes blood, but that's organic matter. It burns out.
There you go.
You don't have to worry about that.
How did you guys both find your first markets? How did you say, okay, I feel that I'm at a place where I want to sell this. Yeah. I want people to have what I'm creating. What was that like?
I think the first time I was selling, besides like to my mom and my grandmother, who have always been my best customers, I started selling my stuff at Craft Alliance's student faculty sale, which they mm-hmm. do twice a year, November and May. It's a great way to feel validated, like, oh, people actually like want this thing I made. And that was really cool. So I started doing that. I think when I started the business in earnest, like 4 years ago, I think the first pop-up I did was actually with the Women's Creative, which was called something different back then. That was actually like 5 years ago, one mm-hmm. of their first ones. So, and I did a lot of their pop-ups. Who did, like, I'm trying to think of, it seems like a lifetime ago, because we went through such a few years where there was nothing in person that I'm like, back in the day. What, like Craftoberfest?
The Golden Age.
Which is no longer, the Happy Little Craft Show.
Oh, yeah.
This does feel like a really long time ago, doesn't
which
it?
Which is funny. Like, yeah. It in some ways doesn't feel long, right. But when you say it, like, oh, yeah, it was probably...
Was there a moment when you felt like you were ready for shows?
No, not... I mean... I'm literally trying to remember.
Asking each other questions.
I know. Because I'm like, Molly, when was that? Yeah. Well, this is what we do. We just talk all the time forever about. What I do remember is like having like the first maybe 3 or 4 shows I ever did being up until like 3 o'clock in the morning the night before, like freaking out, packing, making sure I had all the stuff, and like running around and packing
the
car.
The night before a show, you're not like creating.
Oh,
more.
No,
like,
no, because it's too late. That's the problem. We're not like jewelers who are still adding their doing all that stuff last minute. Like, our stuff would have had to been. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not unloading kilns at like 500 degrees, packing things up when things are like literally.
Yeah, I get really jealous of people who can make stuff quickly, because I feel like pop-ups have so little notice now. Mm. It'll be 2 weeks notice or something, and I'm like
my work is like, it's like mud in a bag right now. I can't like lug that to a show, and people aren't going to want that. So yeah, it does take a lot. And the last minute stuff gets really stressful, because like last minute for a potter is still seeing things like 2 weeks out, you know, because then in your head you're like scheduling all this stuff. You're like, okay, this bisque client's gonna be 48 hours. Like, this one's gonna be this. It's gonna take me all day to do this glazing.
It's gonna take a week to dry out.
Right, exactly. Like, for Molly's plate, it's a week more. And then rushing the cooling process, and like I said, unloading things when they're too hot and you shouldn't yet, and all of that.
So,
it's stressful.
When was your first show? And same question to you. Did you feel ready? Like, did you feel
the way
like
you asked me that made me think that maybe you
was there a moment for you that you said, okay, I'm ready to put this out to the public and see if they want to buy it?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I feel like yes and no. My first pop-up was at East and West in the Central West End. My partner now owns a store, but
I love that store.
It was before Roy was the owner. Brian asked me to do an event there, and that was like my launch. That was my first time like making the dishes that I actually still make today. And
how did it go? What do you remember about it?
Probably like one of my more put together events. It went.
I feel like that's generally the opposite when people talk about like that first event. Yeah. It was a shit show.
It was like very calm and exciting. And I had like my friend come and like take photos. Like I feel like it went really well.
That's because then eventually you get like so used to it that you kind of get sloppy and you're like, oh, well, I don't have this, you know.
Yeah.
But that first one, because it's like you're.
I think my first busy pop-up season, I was working a full-time job. So I would go and the pop-up would start at like 6 or something, and you can set up from 4 to 6 p.m. and I would get off work at 4:30 or 5 and like had already loaded my car up. It was a mess. It wasn't great.
I have to say, like, this is interesting to me because, and I'm, well, it's not like we're asking all the artists right now, but I like post-pandemic, because I was really excited because 2020 I got into Schlafly's Art Outside. I got into Lohmeyer. I was super excited, and then everything shut down.
Those were like bigger.
Yeah, they were bigger. Yeah, that I was really excited to participate in. And then when everything shut down, I had to focus like all on online sales and wholesale. And coming out of the pandemic, like creeping out of it slowly and doing in-person events, I'm kind of like, I don't want to lug hundreds and hundreds of pounds of stuff around. And like, it takes so much, like, I think people don't necessarily think about this, but it takes so much like physical and emotional like energy to like get through a day or a weekend of talking to that many people. So I'm like useless for a week after a show. Like I can't
do anything.
Well,
potters are also very
I would feel like you're generally introverted. More introverted.
We are. Yeah. We like hide in our little dungeons and just talk to clay in our heads sometimes out loud. And we don't socialize
well. We did an event to try and get some like local potters together. Mm-hmm. And it was really sweet. It'd been a long time coming. We'd wanted to organize something like that. And we just, you know, went to Sippy, had a couple glasses of wine.
Which it was great. For those listening, is a new wine bar on Cherokee Street that is adorable and
it's
amazing.
Great. Yeah, we sat on the patio. It was like the perfect weather. And I was like, I have not, like all of these people, I'm looking at a table of people. I know all of their brands. I know all of their work. Now I know their faces, and now they're all talking to each other, and it's like I haven't seen that.
But I gotta say, we're an awkward bunch.
Oh, we're really awkward. Yeah, yeah.
Every single one of us.
It's true.
And so then how did the mug market become something that you guys created?
Well, so going back to 2019, which was the year I think you were really like getting into your business, and so was I. Molly and I had met at Craft Alliance because we were both teaching kids summer camps.
So cute.
So we knew each other from there. We were in the same like pop-up circuits.
One of the few like people under 60 years old there.
Got it. Makes sense. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's like, who's that person? And then we decided, like, I remember, and the same thing where it's like, we're so isolated, like ceramic artists generally, especially if you're just, you know, working in your own studio. I was like, I need to make clay friends and you seemed cool. And we decided at some point we would like get coffee or something. We decided we're going to do something together, and I don't think at that particular moment we knew it was going to be the mug market.
No, I think, I mean, that was when we were considering getting a studio together.
That's
initially
true. Yeah, yeah.
But we were like, well, I don't really know you yet.
That's true.
We need to
and
test
I was like,
sure.
She's so
out.
Young. And now it turns out that your soul is probably like 10 times older than mine. But that's like, but yeah, I remember we got coffee at Maypop. Remember we were sitting outside and I remember taking a lot of notes.
Yeah.
But then what came out of that was the mug market. Because I think eventually our conversation shifted towards like, wow, it's really crazy that more potters here don't know each other, and wouldn't it be cool? I mean, we have St. Louis is really great about supporting artists, and we have all of these different and sometimes overlapping customer bases, but it would be like, let's get all the people who are excited about buying handmade pottery excited to buy, like, everybody's, and we didn't know what that would look like either.
Well, and I think part, like a big part of it for me was just like, yeah, our craft makes it really tricky to just have a booth. Mm-hmm. You know, having, making 50 pieces is a huge undertaking. So how do we like make it a little bit more accessible for everyone? You know, if we all put our work together, then we'll have enough. But there are so many people who, you know.
Well, and there's some potters who are, you know, whipping out hundreds and hundreds of mugs every month. And there's some people who either they've just started out and are experimenting, or they make really small batches of things as a hobby. We wanted to find a way where we could get all of those things together
in one
because
place.
If someone's just making 10 mugs for fun, but they're great, like, well, how do they get those things out in front of people?
Right.
So that's kind of how. Yeah, that's kind of how the mug market began.
Do they spend more time trying to figure out Instagram than they actually spent making those mugs?
That's so true. So it's like, let us do that for you, and let us sell your work for you, and yeah.
And so it's coming up.
It is coming up on the 9th.
Yeah,
October 9th.
Okay, and so what, for people who don't know what it is,
sure.
What is it? Tell us a little
bit
about
it. Can we tell you about the history of it? Because it's just really, okay.
Yes, tell me the history. So, well, I know it had like, was it the first one that was like insanely popular?
Well, so that was the whole thing. So we started this, 2019 was the first one in November of 2019. And so we had, if you've been to Blueprint Coffee on Watson, they have a really cool like.
Stay tuned, we'll be having an episode with them in the coming weeks.
So okay, there you go. Yeah. And then hopefully people will be even more familiar because they will have come to the mug market.
Exactly.
So their back patio is super cute. It's not huge. I mean, I would say the space was like, I mean, it wasn't big. We had how many artists? A little under 20. It was people that we invited to participate.
I think initially we were going to do 15 and it ended up being 20.
Yeah. Not a whole bunch of mugs, maybe a couple hundred?
200. It was 200
mugs. It was 200
mugs,
yeah. And we had a line going around the building.
I can remember the photos. I mean, like, wow, people I was going to go. And then I was like, I don't think I'll get a mug.
People were like a little miffed about it. And we're like, we didn't know. Thank you for showing up,
yeah.
St. Louis. But we didn't know you wanted this.
Parking.
They were.
We were like, we're just.
We're just
like
doing
to be
a
mad
thing.
About things.
That's okay, but that's when you know you've made it, when people are mad that you're
exactly.
not, you know. But so, and then so we're really excited. We spent like the beginning of 2020, of course, planning, getting really excited about how we're going to do it better. And then
boom.
And so then we did that year online, which was really great. It was great to be able to get customers who aren't local, who still support these artists to buy things, but it was insane. We did it. I did all the shipping through my home studio at the time, which was also, I was in the middle of production mode. So I'm like, and then last year was a really big success. We kind of took everything we learned from both of those years, even though very different experiences. And I think we did a great event. So this is like the first time we feel like we're going back and just doing what we did well and doing it even better. So, but to answer your question, so basically we're going to have around 400 mugs, right?
I think it's 500.
500 now, from 25 artists, but it's not set up like separate booths. It's going to be all of the mugs, all of these different kinds of mugs, all together on tables.
So.
There probably will be a line, but we're putting half of the inventory out at the beginning of the event, and then we're doing restocks on the next 2 hours because we want to make sure that anyone who's waiting in line for a long time gets to find that specific mug that they wanted from a specific artist before it disappears.
Yeah. We're also like pretty careful about pacing. So, you know, once you get to like approach and look at the mugs, you do have time. It's not stressful.
It's not a free for all. No one's wrestling.
Right.
It's
you
too
get
dangerous.
Time to kind of pick up and consider and enjoy the different works before you pick, you know, which mug you want to take home
because
with you.
Because we were kind of talking earlier when you were holding your mug that you've got right there. There is that sort of experience of like holding a mug, and it is so much more
than personal.
Picking up, like, it's funny. My husband like always tells me, he's like, Alexis, you have way too many coffee mugs. I'm like, he's like, and you only use like five of them. I'm like, right, because those are the five that like I like the way the handle is. Like, I like the lip of it. It's like they're like you're very specific on what kind of mug you want. And did you guys choose mugs because that is sort of the most, I don't know, approachable for some people when they're buying pottery or people use a lot of, I mean, how did you guys decide mugs
are? It felt simple. Initially, we weren't only going to do mug events. We had been planning, actually, in 2020, we were going to do a planter event.
Oh, yeah.
That spring of 2020.
With Urban Matter on South Grand, yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, mugs are, in this season, it's suddenly cozy season and everyone wants to hold on to a warm beverage. And also I think that they're very giftable. And also kind of like, you can always have another mug.
They're kind of.
Sure.
Alexis,
you cannot always have another mug.
We would like to encourage anyone who's listening to adopt a one in, one out policy. Okay. So if your cupboard is overflowing, you just pick the one that's like hiding in the back corner, push something else into that back corner, and then come and buy a brand new favorite mug.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you when you do see those lines, that support from St. Louis, whether it's at the Mug Market or any pop-up event?
Oh my
what
gosh.
Does it mean to you?
I think St. Louis, and I don't want to say uniquely because I know across the country there's lots of cities that show up for its local businesses. But I think even before the pandemic, but certainly through this, I mean, just the support for local restaurants, small businesses, and artists has been so huge. And it's not something we take for granted. Like, seeing those lines is like, wow, like here's a crowd of people who want to have to take home something that someone nearby made is really, really great. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels good. I think the Mug Market for both of us is like feels really like healthy because it's not quite as tied to our personality and our emotion. And we can just really like celebrate other people's work and let it out into the world and like see how, you know, it's received.
You can see that joy of someone picking up your product or somebody else's, you know, hard work and hold it and want to take it home with them.
Yeah. And I think that it is just such a unique experience to be able to like consider all of these different people's works. I mean, 25 different artists.
Oh, sure.
Like, you don't get to, you can go to an art museum and see that much work, but you're not touching it. You're not experiencing it. You're not going to take it home. You know, there's clothing stores that I'll go to and it feels almost like the same thing where there's all these different designers and there's all these different cuts and styles and fabrics and you get to experience it in a really cool way. But, you know, maybe it's not accessible enough to be able to take home with you. So it's a pretty like unique experience for anyone coming.
And the diversity that we have of our artists. I mean, you have people like mugs there being made by people who've been doing this for 50 years. And there's people who have just started a couple of years ago and maybe they're making their mugs, you know, at their dining room table. And other, we have university professors. We have a lot of like actually a handful of high school ceramics teachers, people who are doing it full time as their business, people who are doing it as a hobby. And it's just really exciting for me to see all of that represented as these physical objects all like in a little cluster. I love it.
Check out the description of this podcast episode. You'll see the details of the where and when of the upcoming St. Louis Mug Market. But even if you can't make that, there are so many local pop-ups and craft shows for you to find and support local and regional artists. Thanks for listening, and we'll meet you back here next week.